Mr. Rayner Taylor, Reel 5. We were talking about your training with the training battalion at Priest Heath near Whitchurch from, roughly speaking, August to November 1916. When did you first get introduced to the rifle, training?
During on the latter end of our basic training at Priest Heath. Then, yes, and we were taught the basics about rifles, taught how to use them. Originally, it was rifle drill. There were certain movements that was used when you had a rifle.
What was that? Do you remember?
Slope arms, trail arms, and all to familiarise yourself with the handling of the rifle, because they're a pretty hefty weapon, you know. And then, when you'd done that, you're introduced to firing a rifle. And initially, you fired blanks, which, well, no bullet in, of course.
Did you have a smaller rifle first?
The no.
See what you
right,
start...
straight onto this, SMLE, Short Magazine Lee Enfield. I always remember that name.
What was it like firing the blanks?
Well, there wasn't as big a kick on it as there was firing live ammunition. That was the only difference. You'd take aim and you were firing, but there was no bullet attached to it. You got a kick, but not as much as you did with live ammunition. You got quite a kick with that.
You know? How did they teach you to take aim? Because it's not that easy, is it, with a weapon?
Oh, no. Well, you were taught the basics of the lining a rifle up for firing, like the back sides and the fore sides, and these two had to be in line, and in such a way hit the target.
How did they show you that? I mean,
there was diagrams, but mainly you were shown by the real thing. You knew what, when you got down, if you look along the barrel of a rifle, you see the back sight, that's a U-shaped thing, and a tip on the right of the front of the magazine, and you line these two up, and you will learn that. And then you will learn to how to load and unload, how to fire with a bayonet attached to it.
What difference did that make?
Well, a lot of difference, really, because the bayonets in those days were long, unwieldy things. I never really knew the value of them. We were frightened of them and chopping wood. That was about the only thing I ever knew them to be of value for. But if you had a bayonet on, it tended to pull it down at the front, you see, because of the weight. You had to compensate against that weight by holding it more firmly, and you learned how to do these things.
What about fast loading? Did they teach you to do rapid fire?
Or? Oh, yes. Rapid fire, I think rapid fire would be about 15 rounds a minute. A magazine would hold 10 in the magazine on what we call one up the spout. That's one in the chamber.
10 in the magazine?
10 in the magazine. They're in clips of five. A clip of five. And the magazine would hold two clips. And if you wanted to be sure, you could stick an odd one up the spout, we used to call it. So that you could really... A fully loaded rifle would hold 11. But it's very rare. I never had any occasion to use it.
Were you able to fire 15 in a minute after your training?
I don't know. I know, I'm not quite sure about that, because if you trained everybody, the expendability of the bullets against a background of an earth bank, it must have been fearful, you know. But see, you had to learn some way, and they didn't time you. They would. You learned to take aim and fire and do it as quickly as you could, but mainly to fire accurately. To be accurate is better than to fire quickly and miss. Now, and that was how they were, that was how you were basically trained.
When did you fire on the range at Priestheath?
No, not on the range. There were different places. There were ranges which were used for, there'd be a central place and it was used for army camps for miles and miles round. Because it's not something that you're doing every day. What we used to call firing a course meant you were fully trained when you fired a course. You were a fully trained soldier then. And that was really one of the last. That was the icing on the cake, shall we say. And there would be a range, a different place, and they'd come from camps all over the place. Now there's one just in Oldham, just above.
Do you remember where the range was near Priestheath?
Well, no, I don't know about that. I do remember where we fired. It was at Bury St Edmunds from Beccles.
So you did that bit of your course when you were with the Glamorgan
Yeomen? Yeah, yes, yeah.
So you just did the firing with blanks at Priestheath?
Yes, and live ammunition. Oh, yes, you.
What was the kick like?
Oh, it was a kick. It was a fair one.
Did it frighten you at first?
Yes. In fact, I think the first shot, I thought it knocked my shoulder out. It was quite a kick. It meant to say you'd got to hold it very firmly. Fire a course would be, you'd fire at 100 yards, at 200 yards, and perhaps 600. And in the range, there was a high bank, and the targets were on a framework, big targets they were, you know.
This is at Bury St Edmunds.
Yes, they were same everywhere. This was standard. And they were duplicated because when one lot had fired, these boys changed over and they plastered a bit of paper over the holes where the bullets had gone in, so that when it went up, when the next lot came, you had a clean target and you knew what had happened. And the people In the boats, they were called markers. And these were people who used to signal what happened to a certain shot. A bull would go, perhaps you'd have a big stick, shall we call it, with a big round black disc, and you stick that up so that the person firing knew what they'd hit. And for an inner and an outer. And if they did nothing, you used to wave this thing, you know. It was quite interesting, that.
And how did you do it, firing?
I wasn't bad. In fact, on my record, it was first-class shot. So I knew I wasn't bad, but I didn't reach the marksman stage. No, I didn't.
What do you think made you a reasonable shot? What was the important thing about
being... I think eyesight, for one thing. Eyesight. And then I think I'd been told by my brothers when he came home. I was just like anybody inquired, I was a very inquiring mind. What did you do? And he used to say you had to press make sure you held it. And I've lay on the rug at our house when he was on leave. And I've lay on the rug with his rifle and before ever I went in the army, so I knew a bit about him before he'd go in. I was getting ready.
What about maintenance of your rifle? Did they teach you how to do that?
Oh, very, very much so. You were issued with what was in the butt of the rifle. there was a cavity which contained a brass bottle which had oil in it, and a piece of cord with a piece of metal attached to it about the size of a cigarette. And that was known as, that was called a pull through. After firing, you were supposed to clean the rifle, pull it through, they call it. Also, in this cavity would be a piece of cloth, and it was always called 4x2, which meant to say it was 4 inches long, 2 inches wide, and it was looped in the end of the this cord. You turn the rifle and drop this weight through the barrel, and the weight carried the cord through. Came out at the other end, and you pulled it through. That's why it became, you know, you pulled it through, and the cloth, this 4x2 on the end, cleaned the barrel. That's how you clean your barrel. And they were very, very particular indeed about keeping your rifle in tip-top condition, because they used to examine it, and they had a very peculiar at first, but it was basic, but I can't think even today anything more effective. You would open the breech, open the bolt, and holding the rifle this way, the officer would come along and he would glance down the barrel. Now at the bottom of the barrel he had your thumb like that, thumbnail. So what he could see right down the barrel and your thumbnail at the end, so he could tell whether it was clean. It was very basic, but by word was it effective. And you did get heavily punished for having a dirty barrel, you know. Yeah, I don't know anybody who didn't look after the rifle. It was said your rifle was your best friend. That's what they always told you in the army, your rifle was your best friend. You did look after it, there was no doubt about it.
Were they well made at that time of the war?
Very well made. Excellent. The quality of our equipment was very good indeed. Very good. We may have quarrelled with the Hughes many a time, but it was very well made.
What about bayonet drill and fighting? Were you trained in that at Priestley?
Oh, yes, yes. They stuck this bayonet on the end of the rifle with a sort of spring clip. Stuck it on there. And you were taught to stick this bayonet in straw bags, paint it to look like a man, and make a lot of noise while you were doing it. It sounds right daft now, but it was very effective. And they formed, they used to have bayonet fighting teams, and different regiments and brigades, divisions. They, for want of something to do, they made these sports days. And one of the items would be a bayonet fighting competition, which would mean a team would, with a mock attack, jumping out of the trenches, meeting figures strung up, bayoneting them. And after you've done that, you have to fire to the target with blanks. You'd be loaded up with blanks for that occasion. And then you go on and then jump into the so-called enemy trench and dispatch a few more straw bags, making as much noise as you could. And it became very, very exciting. And different units, they're very proud of their ability. And yet, to see me now, I sometimes wonder whether it's true, but I know it's true. I won a medal for a bayonet fighting company. Me of my size. I don't know what the rest of them. But I was in a bayonet fighting competition and I won a medal. And the medal is inscribed with my name, R. Taylor, in the handwriting of the colonel.
Which regiment was this? Was this with the training battalion? Or
yes, what? Yes, with the Glamorgan Yeomanry.
That's with the Yeomanry later on, yeah. Did they teach you the techniques of bayonet fighting? Oh,
very much so, very much so. Two men with a bayonet, yeah, you were sure to parry, they call it. I think that was the word, parry or stroke. And they, oh, yes. You learned it, first of all, with brush tails and things like that before we went to the real thing.
Were there many accidents? They're pretty dangerous things.
I couldn't say there was a lot. There was accidents in bayonet fighting. Always. The skin off that, the finger there.
Your right forefinger.
Yes, because as you hold the rifle butt, right at the neck of the butt, and holding the barrel, and you go forward, and if you lunge, of course, it's always been some resistance. Now, on the top of the rifle was a safety catch, and it was a knurled. It was something, it was narrow like that, which you could pull it back or push it forward on safety. Well, always, when in bayonet fighting, always you made this lunge, and well, mine and a lot of other people, your finger jerked forward, and it catch this narrow thing, and it strip you. And regularly that. And I saw more. That happened to more people than less people. I didn't lie. I've actually gone with that strapped up. I knew it would happen. No, some ruddy heel up a bit, then bayonet fighting. Same again, strip it off again.
Did you have any lectures on bayonet fighting?
Yes. The army was very particular on physical well-being, and they used to have people who attended the course mainly at Aldershot, and they were mainly sergeants, fit men, and they had to be fit to have completed the assault course, and having completed, I can't just think always at the end of it on what rank they held. But above their stripes, if they'd passed this course, they had cross swords. That meant they'd done this course. And it was their job to train you. You may only have one to a battalion.
And you had them at Priest Heath?
Yes, because not only did they teach you arms drill, they took you all sorts of physical
training.
Oh yes, sort of.
What sort of exercises did you do?
Well, arms open, you know, like, just like you would do, like kids would do, anything to keep them warm. And I'll tell you another thing, which. It's funny, I can remember these things. They used to have a game, and it was supposed to brighten up your knowledge so that you could recognise something quickly. And I think they called it McDonald's. And the idea was, you start giving your drills, or anything, run so far about. And if they prefaced it with McDonald says and give an order, then you did it, you see. And they would do this in fairly fastly. McDonald says left turn, McDonald says right turn, and you did that, but it will say McDonald says left turn, right turn, and you did it, that's it. Wrong. You done it wrong. You didn't wait till MacDonald had said, oh, this was a game. It caused a lot of fun, and really, thinking about it, separated the wheat from the chaff. Because people with were about a bit duller or dozier, they were the people who were always wrong. And I think in their own minds, they sort these people out, and these were always right. They were right for promotion, if there were any promotion, they were the type of people that they bombed. And it seemed very strange that I didn't think of it in that context at that time, but thinking back, I'm sure that's what it would be, you know.
What about did you do any hand grenade training at
Priest Heath? Oh, yes.
At Priest Heath?
No.
That wasn't part of your basic training?
No.
What other parts of basic training did you have at Priest Heath?
Well, it was mainly fitting, you're getting your fitting up to train, do your proper training. Basic meant getting you ready. That was what mainly that was.
So you did a bit of rifle shooting and bayonet drill at Priest Heath?
No shooting.
Just the blanks?
But drill, yes. Oh, yes.
You did a bit of bayonet fighting there, didn't
you?
Oh,
yes, same thing, but nothing, not as realistic quite as it was as we got further advanced, you know.
What about tactical exercise? Did you do any of them
at
Priest Heath?
Occasionally. There would be what was, they were called schemes. And schemes became a dirty word, really, because some of the higher-ups would think up something, an attack on a village or a mythical place, and it would involve whole battalions, or it may involve a brigade. Oh, it was highly organised. I never went on one that didn't end up with a cock-up. Oh, they're all with a cock-up.
What sort of cock-ups were there?
Well, the wrong people at the right place at the wrong time, sort of thing. You see, things like that. The rations not arriving when they should have done, you know. But it enabled the officers to see to the men to take orders and give orders. It enabled them to do that by a greater number than they usually did. But the schemes caused a lot of fun and a lot of distress. And then you'd spend a week telling the stories of what happened in this thing.
And you did a couple of these while you were at Priest Heath?
Oh, no, not at Priest Heath. You didn't get on them till you became
right.
Actual training. When you were trained, not as individuals, but as units.
Now, just carrying on at Priest Heath, what were the instructors like at Priest Heath?
More elderly men. Quite a lot of them were veterans from the Boer War, which we thought were really old men, you know. But it was only 16 years since the Boer War had finished, you know. So whilst they appeared old to us kids, they weren't really. And a smattering of people who had been wounded and returned to England and not fit for overseas duty, they became instructors. Give them couple of stripes. And
what was their attitude like, these instructors? Were they...
Well, it varied. In the main, they were all right. You got the odd ones which you rather put it on and pull it a bit, but in the main, not bad. They treated us as children. And really speaking, that's all we were. That's all we were. We were only children. We thought we were men. We dressed as men.
There weren't any actual bullies then amongst the NCOs trainers?
No, and I only knew of one who was, I would call him a bully, and he was a senior.
Was that at Priest Heath?
No, this
right,
was...
Right, we'll come to that later then.
No, not at Priest Heath. At Priest Heath, we were treated as schoolboys.
Did you have any officers about at Priestheath?
Oh, yes, yes. Your officer, just in the same manner and numbers, and you would be with a full battalion.
Were they trainee officers as well, or were they
Some of them were old. It was a smattering of them, you know. At Priestheath, we had... our company commander was always a captain, the company commander.
Do you remember his name?
Yes, he was called White. And he was a father figure. To me, he looked older than my own dad. But he was very, very nice. If anybody did anything wrong and they ran up, he didn't shout and bawl at them. He talked to them, let them... tried to tell them, don't do that, don't be a naughty boy, you're better off behaving yourself and obeying orders. And that was his attitude, and he was very good. The senior, he was the regimental sergeant major, a different kettle of fish altogether. He wasn't a nice man at all.
What wasn't nice
his
about
name, him? He was called Viney, and he was a Boer War man. He seemed to take a delight in making it awkward for people. And the warrant officer, of course, the senior of all below the rank of a commissioned officer, he seemed to take a delight in upsetting people.
Do you remember the colonel at Priestheath, what his name was? Because then we could perhaps track the
battalion. No, I don't... When I went to the Glamorgan, I know the colonel's name was...
I'll come back to that, because we're going to come on to that soon. While you're at Priestheath, did you get... What were your sort of recreations like? When you were off duty, what would you do to amuse yourselves?
Well...
At Priestheath?
At Priestheath, there was football and things like that, but basically, you made your own. But football and the ordinary sports were available on the times that you had time for it.
Right. What about canteens? Were there any canteens?
Yes, canteens. There was wet and dry canteens.
Were you still teetotal then, or had you started...
I was still teetotal then.
So you'd go to the dry canteen?
Oh, yes.
What were they like?
Like a corner shop. But you didn't have much money. I'll give you an example. Now I'll have to jump a few weeks till I've gone to the Glamorgan.
I'll come back to that then, and I'll remind you of that. Yeah. Did you get to see any civilians while you were at Priestheath? I know they weren't nearby, but did you ever get out into the nearby villages?
Well, the nearest place you went to at Priestheath was Whitchurch, and it meant a walk of a couple of miles. Oh yes, a weekend you walked down to the town, you know. But you didn't. I couldn't tell what we did in the town because you'd no money to socialise.
Did the local civilians, how did they treat you? Because they had a lot of...
In the main, there, not so bad. But they'd reached the stage when they got fed up with the troops there. And all the troops weren't well behaved. And well-behaved troops didn't make news, as they do same today. The good people don't make news, but the baddies do.
Was there much trouble in Whitchurch?
Not a great lot, no. No, not a great lot.
What sort of trouble would there be when there was?
Well, perhaps there might be a flare-up with some... No, I can't recall trouble there. And there were thousands of Priestheath. If I said there was over 50,000 on Priestheath, I'll be saying too many.